Is Pam here?
I'm here, darling.
Hi, Pam. I'm Crocco here. I just started the recording because we're going to be recording this call for future generations of coaches. And I want to welcome everybody. We've got about 11 people on call today, I think, which is a great turnout. I appreciate everyone being here. This is the ICF's Coaching and Psychotherapy Communities SIG Special Interest Group call, where we really focus on issues distinguishing coaching from psychotherapy and helping build bridges between the coaching and psychotherapy communities. And I want to thank all of you for coming today, and a special program today. I'm starting something that's never been done before. I'm hoping it might be something that we do regularly in the future. And that is Pam Richard is our guest today. I want to thank Pam for coming today. Pam is the past president of the International Coach Federation. And I've known Pam for a long time and just really have a great deal of respect for her. And I know during her tenure as a president, she's literally been traveling all over the world meeting people and just being very much immersed in our coaching community worldwide. And I asked Pam if she'd consider coming to the call today just to talk a little bit about some of her observations as a president of the ICF and considering all the people that she meets in connection to that and her involvement with the ICF board. And to really have her come today to look a little bit at the whole issue of coaching and psychotherapy as professions, the communities that are represented by both of those. And we're going to be doing a little bit of an interview-type format, and then hopefully allowing some time at the end for some questions and answers for people who might be stimulated by some of the discussion here between Pam and I. So, Pam, are you ready to... is there any further introduction you want to do for yourself, Pam?
Oh, no, you did very well. Thank you. I'm ready to go. Is there a beginning code?
Beginning code? Oh, no. Actually, there isn't. Today's call is not for ICF continuing education credit.
All right.
So there will be no beginning and end code. Also, I hear a little bit of background noise. If you're on the call listening, please feel free to mute your phone. If I can remember... I think *6. Yeah, *6 mutes your phones. So if you want to mute your phones, then Pam and I will get going here. So Pam, you've been just kind of, like I said, immersed in the coaching profession for the last year all over the world. Just kind of a general question I was curious about is, what kind of things have you seen? What's kind of the base of all that experience you've had the last year?
There's a couple things. One is that I'll make a very bold statement to say that coaching crosses cultures like nothing I've seen. And I've traveled a lot in my lifetime. I've lived in a variety of countries across the world, at least a lot of different places. And I'll tell you is that the way being or the culture of coaching just steps into amazing, easy connection of hearts, heart connections, as well as head and business connections with people. I found that, for example, I was in Bogota, Colombia, this last year, and met with the local ICF board there for the local chapter. Their work locally is social-based. They're actually working to support people in economic development. In other words, helping people to get more organized so that they can actually have a better sense of what they want to do and have a better job to help support them and raise their economic status in their community so that they can live more, with food on the table, basically. So they're actually dealing with people with basic needs in a way that we might not have seen before. Just fabulous, passionate local projects. in the name of coaching. As a chapter, for example, in Korea, I'm speaking with the Korean population there, really are excited about the impact on coaches because they're actually using it with students who moving towards almost crisis, not from a sense of having stress, because they're being pushed so much to be successful in their school and their careers, and helping them to have the conversations with themselves about how can I best do what I want to do in life, and so they're actually very excited to have an impact on the education and the educational system, even with teaching in Korea. I mean, that's why it's so exciting there, for example. In Shanghai, Korea, Eva Wong's group worked the businesses, the productivity and the employee wellness and happiness and well-being and retention and all of those things are just amazing. I met probably in one form or another 500 of business owners that her company was actually using coaching with that just had nothing but good to say about the impact of the coaching conversations that their employees have had and what's happened to the whole environment in well-being and everything else. So that kind of gives you a flavor of the conversations that I've had, all over. And there's something that is occurring in relation to the business market where the businesses, where in the non-North American market, so you know for yourself, the coaching has entered primarily in the business and the corporate versus North America. We kind of jumped off the cliff with the personal development side of things. And now it's integrated more. But now the businesses are really looking at the employees' well-being is impacting the well-being of the business and the bottom line and their productivity in ways that they haven't before. So that they're more open to leadership development programs. They're more open to employee wellness in a way that is distinct from anything that they've done before. Because many of them, and we know this in the States a lot, where employees get help when they're in crisis, and then it's really a psychology issue many of the time. It's not, it hits the edge where they need, not coaching anymore. They need, the level of help that you all provide. And so it's, it's kind of not even an intervention. It's stepping ahead of the game, and that's happening all over Europe right now, particularly. A lot of the corporations are bringing in, coaches to develop stronger teams and clarity of vision and mission, and it's pretty exciting. It's a household word across the planet in ways much more quickly than I personally, who've been in this for 15 or so years, would have seen or even imagined. Pretty amazing, Tom.
Mm-hmm. So, more of us on these sick calls, Pam, are psychotherapists who are now coaches.
Right.
What do you see as the current relationship between the coaching and psychotherapy professions or communities around the world?
It's evolved, and I'm just so happy to say that there are lovely partnerships and there's lovely distinctions. Some of the more modern psychotherapy models are very coaching oriented. I mean, positive psychology is actually emerged since coaching has emerged, which is so much related. The distinctions are clearer now for people, so that there's partners between people that are in their practice in psychotherapy to say it's time for you to move on in coaching. Coaching is for you. I see that happening. Psychotherapists that are referring people to coaches because that's really what they need versus therapy. And vice versa, of course. Coaches saying, this crosses the line because they're clearer now. Especially with the schools that have been around, that are accredited by the ICF that agree to the ethics and standards, have clearer understanding of the distinction. So lots of coaches are referring when someone needs it to the other professions, whether it's psychotherapy or psychiatry or whatever it actually happens to be. And so I think it's a developing relationship that is emerging as support, as, you know, much different than it was in the beginning where there was lack of clarity and, you know, people may have been crossing the line and there was fear on both sides. You know, it's just, it's evolved in ways that I consistently see. And again, not just in North America where we are, but over the planet. You know, some of the stigma that people had, you know, in the workplace and even asking for help. You know, in different countries it's different. Asking for help is not seen sometimes as possible. So that's even evolving, that, you know, if someone wants the support of a coach and then they clearly, it needs to be something else, they'll move into that more fluidly than they did, you know, before, because of the availability of the clarity in the conversations of what it's for. I know that sounds funny, but sometimes even coaching in the workplace can be the entry point to someone for the first time looking at something that should be like a psychology issue, an issue dealt with by a therapist, and it actually is the road to them that they may not have done otherwise, you know, get the referral. So there's it's a lovely integrated relationship. That's a long way of saying that. But I think it's becoming clearer and clearer, in my experience anyway.
In your experience with coaches, Pam, do you see coaches as being more aware of the importance of distinguishing coaching and therapy?
Yes. I mean, I tell you, I still train periodically, and one of the questions that you know, they ask at the very beginning is, how will we know that where the line is, right? How, it's one of their early questions. They want to know. They ask for it. You know, it's clear, you know, they've agreed to the ethics and standards of the ICF, anybody who's in any trainings that I'm involved with, you know, and really understand, and to really look at the distinction. So they're asking for it, and then asking for it, they're getting it. So by the time they're done with even, you know, a construct of a, you know, say a 60 or 70 hour training, just the basic level of training, they get it. They feel it in their bodies almost, right? That's what I'm just telling you what they've said to me, right? They totally see it. Well, this is a, you know, this is not, you know, some type of support. You know, there's other kinds of support, and, you know, might I give you a referral, or you have some other kind of support. I mean, you know, it's in the front of their minds at the beginning of the training. Those people who are committed to training. Now, conversely, those people who are not committed to training, you know, out in the world, you know, there's still a lot of people calling themselves coaches because we're not regulated formally. We're self-regulating at this time. And anybody who is an ICF member, we, of course, have, you know, some opportunity to deal with in the ethics and standards realm, right? But if you're not a member, not agreed to the ethics and standards of the ICF, and there are many people that do that without being a member as well. But, you know, we still have some of the coaches that, you know, aren't coaching. And not even just not doing coaching with the line between psychotherapy coaching, but between mentoring and coaching and teaching and coaching and consulting and coaching. You know, we're still, you know, it's pretty young. We're a pretty young profession. And what we've done in the last decade is pretty amazing, actually. And that being said, there are still people out there that don't understand the distinction because we haven't engaged them in the conversation yet, or they're not interested in being in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there are two kinds of people who may not understand those distinctions. Coaches who don't have a psychotherapy background, who don't understand where coaching, I guess, overlaps into therapy, and therapists who don't really understand what coaching is particularly.
Yeah, and I see it both ways, right? I've seen it both ways. I've seen therapists who are really still doing therapy and calling it coaching and not recognizing that. You know, they're just not recognizing. And I've seen it the other way around. But, you know, there are plenty of people that are coaches that don't have a psychotherapy background. For example, I'll use one of the schools, Hudson Institute. You know, their their whole construct of learning is based on adult development, right? And the, you know, the psychological patterns of adult development. And so all their theoretical training and everything, it gives you a clear understanding of that. And they don't have to be psychologists to understand where the lines are drawn, right? I mean, there's training that can actually help facilitate that. And I know it for a fact that it can be very clearly articulated. But people have to be committed to learning. They have to be, you know, what is this thing called coaching? And if they're committed to being in the profession as a coach, then, you know, just as with any profession, psychology, accounting, being a lawyer, being a teacher, you've got to go and get specific training. And you can tell I have an opinion on that. But it's just dangerous otherwise. I mean, you all know that, you know, a coach that crosses the line and does, you know, that should belong in your realm, in the therapeutic realm, is completely dangerous. I mean, it's awful. So, you know, there is the both sides of it, and we're going to have that for a while as we continue to grow, until we find more and more ways of engaging the people, whether they are forced to because of some kind of regulatory issues or, you know, in different states, or because in order for them to be hired by a client, the client is informed enough to ask for credentials. And that's where I see it going, actually, is that we're educating the market well enough so that the consumers that actually want to hire a coach will know the difference, and they'll ask for the training, and they'll ask for the credential, which more and more are. I mean, at least in businesses and corporations, you know, where'd you get your training? You know, Chevron called, for example, the ICF office about 6 months ago and said, look, we're going to bring some coaching into our organization. What should we be looking for? What should we be asking for credentials? And that's a, you know, Chevron's a pretty huge company. So more and more are becoming savvy into asking for what they need to know that they're getting what they ask for. Right, and again, that relates to, you know, coaches that are doing coaching and not consulting and not therapy and not anything else.
Mm-hmm. So, Kim, on the topic of training and coach training programs, are you finding that ICF certified programs are making a point of being able to clarify that distinction between coaching and therapy?
Generally speaking, I would say yes. There's, you know, some of the new programs that are because they're actually designing their programs around the competencies versus the theoretical basis that are underneath the competencies, sometimes it can be a little bit unclear on you know, just how clear they're being on distinguishing things. I don't know that I was very clear in what I just said. So I think, for example, in the examination processes at the schools, the questions that are asked, well, some of them are required, is, you know, what is the distinction and what is the difference between, you know, coaching and therapy, coaching and consulting. You know, the exams, I've seen exams from, you know, probably 17 out of the 30-some approved schools that we actually have right now, and all of them have some kind of an ethics question around distinguishing coaching. So if they're doing the work that they're supposed to be doing, according to the ICF, then they're doing the work. I can only personally vouch for the ones, you know, 17 or so that I've seen of their exam. I know it's in there. But the rest of all agreed to those ethics and standards of helping their students to understand and distinguish coaching as a distinct field outside of the other related fields, whatever they are, whether it's, you know, psychotherapy or whether it's you know, teaching or consulting or any of those. So, you know, from my personal experience, I would say yes, I think they are doing it. And I think also personally there's always room for more.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an important priority for the ICF.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because, you know, there's, as we distinguish it, if we're not clear for ourselves and we don't make our members clear, which is one of the reasons we changed our membership affiliations to credentialed coaches who have been shown to know the distinction, you know, versus those that are, you know, moving up into a certified or certification or credentialed status. We can educate the public as to, you know, at what level people are going to understand our ethics, right? And that's one of them, is to actually really distinguish.
So when someone just from public approaches you and says, Pam, what's the difference between coaching and psychotherapy? What do you tell them?
Well, almost nobody ever asks me that, okay? You know, it's the dance of the language and answering that question between coaching and psychotherapy. There are so many ways, and none of them are adequate, okay? There are so many ways. Well, you know, coaching deals with the present, and psychotherapy deals with the future, and psychotherapy deals with the past, and that isn't completely true. Or, you know, coaching is, you know, a goals-based, proactive relationship to help you, you know, design your life around what you want, and, you know, psychotherapy is to help you, you know, be clear to heal, you know, some of the wounds that might be keeping you from moving forward. I mean, and let's see what else can we say, right? It's totally said so many different ways, but as soon as you start to compare them, as far as I'm concerned, none of them are adequate. The experience of being in a coaching conversation helps to distinguish completely, which is why I almost never talk about it. Almost nobody ever asks me that question, because of, you know, my style and who I am. Is I, you know, get people into I get permission to get into a coaching dialogue right away, and they perceive. Particularly if they've had any form of, therapy or in the past, they experience it themselves, and they can articulate it. Well, you know, we put together, you know, differently, or, it's so unique because every single therapist is different too, right, Tom, right, and every single coach is different. So without prevaricating, it's really... I try not to actually articulate distinctions to my customers as much as show them the distinction. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm. I guess this is one of the challenges within the coaching profession, though, is we're looking at two different paradigms in many ways.
Yes, absolutely.
And how do you articulate the distinctions in those paradigms rather than getting caught up in the overlap?
Well, exactly. And there is the overlap because we're human beings, right? We have feelings. We have emotions. And, you know, the way I articulate it to students sometimes is if I take my 10 fingers and open up my hands in front of me, right? And on the left is coaching and on the right is psychotherapy. I take my thumbnails and put them on top of each other, right? And I say, then there's the overlap because we're human beings, right? And then, you know, how you dance with them as a coach is different than how you dance with them as a therapist. And, you know, that's where they meet. And they are two different paradigms, which is one of the reasons why I just said what I said about, you know, what's the difference between coaching and psychotherapy, right? They come from, you know, completely different places overall, yet there are places that they overlap. Because we do talk about feelings sometimes, right? We do talk about desires and dreams in both of those realms, but from a different, you all know, I don't know, I'm talking to the choir here, okay? I'm preaching to the choir.
Before we go to our question and answer period, Pam, I have another question because in the recent changes in the ethical code, I think actually it's probably almost 2 years old now, they've added parts to the ICF ethics code that referrals be done when necessary, and that there's a duty to warn when there's a endangerment to oneself or others. And those are very important parts of the ethics code that kind of speaks to the overlap maybe between coaching and psychotherapy to some degree. Do you know if these codes are being integrated into the curriculum that's required by coach training programs in terms of all sorts of things being covered and discussed for developing coaches?
I know that the ones that I'm aware of, I've seen that. I know think.com, for example, because I still periodically do training for them. I know that they talk about that, right, to their students. Right, it's, you know, they're actually looking at the ethics and really specifically dealing with the ethics conversation. And the foundation of that is laid very early on in the first 60 or 70 hours of their training. So I know that for a fact. And I'm one of the ICF credential schools. And so my assumption would be that the other schools have been given it, and it is part of the ethics, and they do have to, all their students have to read and sign the ethics statement, even to be a part of the school, right? So it's in front of them. Now, I can't personally talk to them, they actually go into them individually. I just know that, you know, coaching.com goes into it. You know, that's, I know for sure, again, only because of my personal experience and relationship with them. And that being said, it is really important that has gotten added to the code of ethics, because the crossover is me. The door gets open that may not have been opened without the coaching conversation, and the pathway is no longer coaching in that particular doorway. It's psychotherapy, and so a referral is necessary. That's kind of the blessing of the marriage of these two paradigms, is they can support each other. And then, you know, some people may come to therapy, they don't really need therapy, they just want to be kind of support that could be coaching. So I think this particular addition to the ethics code is actually the part that helps to inform the coach as to, okay, this is the next step, and this is what you're responsible for if there's danger, right? You know, which has always been the case in psychotherapy, you know, well, since the ethics and standards have been, you know, deeply embedded in all different trainings, and legally and everything else. You know, if someone's in danger, you've got to follow up appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Pam. I'd like to open the call up to some question and answer now, too, because I'm sure that there's been a lot of thought stimulated based on what we've talked about so far today. So if you're muting your call, *6 will unmute it if you have a question for Pam. And who'd like to go first?
I have a question. This is Jonathan Sibley.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Pam. In your travels, have you run into at all the folks in Australia or the UK who are putting together groups on coaching psychology?
No, not directly. I know of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know that they're out there. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, they seem to be really exploring not just differences, but also the overlap. And I'm wondering, based on your comments, what you think about that. There are people, presumably, who are trained and certified in both.
Well, you know, personally, I haven't thought about it enough to have any opinion, or haven't looked at their work, Jonathan, right? To have an informed opinion. But the thing that's missing in, you know, coaching, rooting it as a profession or deepening it as a profession, is the gathering of the theoretical bases that inform the different, coach approaches, or the different constructs of teaching that different schools like Hudson or you know, Newfield or any of them have. It's not gathered, and what I see occurring, which is related to what you're saying, what I see occurring is people actually gathering the different fields of study, whether it's psychology, sociology, you know, the human development, anthropology, all of the things that have informed our it's better said, actually informed the whole conversation of needs, you know, with people, you know, getting coaching or anything like that. So they're pulling things together. For example, Fielding Graduate University has an executive coaching program. And the first 12 weeks of their program, it's all on the different philosophical pieces that have informed the different stages of adult learning, or different ways of looking at things, you know, whether it's, you know, teamwork, or, you know, some of it from, you know, all the different kinds of psychological bases, and all of those things form us in actually how we approach or think about something. And they made much of it, you know, from human psychology, because we're dealing with human beings, hearts and souls and lives, and so that's being gathered And when it's gathered, it's studied, right, and it's being included, it's actually giving people better distinctions between what they're doing in coaching and therapy and why this is so. And it doesn't surprise me then that they're actually using this coaching psychology to go to articulate the overlap, Jonathan, but I'm not clear what that means in what they're doing because I haven't seen any of this work. But I'm not surprised that it's led to that because theories are being gathered.
It's interesting that it's in the UK and Australia, but not in the US quite yet.
Yeah, I don't know. It's even hard to think about why that is. I know that the UK and Australia both are looking to really speed up some of the theoretical basis, right? You know, the connecting the dots between the theory and the practice. I know even here, there are some things happening here in the U.S. that are, you know, for example, Columbia University is backing into the competencies, in other words, backfilling them. In other words, here's the competency. See what theories actually support these competencies. In coaching, that's one way of the UK, they're coming from more of an educational perspective, is what I think, right? Rather than a practitioner perspective. That may be why they're leading in that area, Jonathan.
Thank you. Jonathan, are you talking about the integration of coaching and therapy? Yeah, there are two journals now that are out. We've had several issues, and it's coming from the British Psychology Society, I believe, and also from one of the universities in Australia.
That's an understanding of the question, I think. Integrating them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they're looking at if you have both hats. I mean, I think you articulated there are separate issues potentially if you are formally certified in training and therapy or in coaching versus if you're certified in both.
Right. And a good therapist is also has certain components of coaching, right? It's going to be what it is, the integration. Even the positive psychology is so much coaching, I can't even tell you. if you read any of Mark Seligman's work, right? And that's just emerged, you know, pretty much since coaching has been there. So I think there's part of both are coming from a place of filling need in our world today that's different than the need was, you know, when Freud came up with his theory, for example, and where we're at and what we need to do. And so, you know, I'm not surprised that they would be integrating, but I don't know as much about them as would be helpful to have a decent conversation about.
Pam, can I add something here?
Yeah,
Tony Grant's doing a lot of work in the psychology area, and what one of the distinctions that I'm seeing is that mostly that group that's doing those studies are really coming from the basis, so it's the basic psychology. And the window of opening a new part of psychology is coaching. Whereas here, what I'm seeing, at least in North America, is that the basis is coaching, all right, with a window into psychology, like positive psychology. And I know even in teaching at NYU, we have a program where we look at, you know, how we use, you know, psychology from the positive aspect of psychology, and that's really the focus of what coaching is. As you said, it's so much akin to positive psychology as opposed to looking at, you know, focusing on the dysfunction, working on the strength instead of, you know, so I think that they come from the context of the basis for all of that research, and that drive comes from a little bit different base.
Yeah, it's the distinction of the practitioner base, right, versus, I mean, really the practical application doing of coaching and then moving into the theoretical. They're starting more from the theoretical base based on from the psychology standpoint, right?
Right. Studies and research and findings, and so now, what's happening in even the academic world, at least in the U.S., is that there's the kind of practitioner versus academician, scientist practitioner, and that they're trying to construct programs that I found even teaching at NYU that many students come in with really wanting the academic rigor, and then when they're in the program, there becomes an instant hunger for the practice. So there's a challenge of actually, I think, delivering both areas.
Mm-hmm. And it is a challenge. It's one of my actual worries in academia right now, personally, right? Which is one of the reasons I'm in my own doctorate program at the moment. So,
In the United States, there's a number of sources I've cited in the SIG website that has attempts people have made in writing on the distinction between coaching therapy. And I think I've got about 5 or 6 documents there at the current time. And also the Patrick Williams School, Lynn Meinke and some of her colleagues and I have done some work at recent ICF conferences looking at this distinction in coaching and psychotherapy too. So those are some sources within the Americas that are trying to point to and look at some of those things. And I have another question for Pam.
Don't be shy. Don't forget you have your mute buttons on too, so many of you did. You have to push the *6 again. You know, if you don't agree with the things I have said, you know, they're just simply a kind of an opinion or a response to questions that Tom has. And, you know, I would just really invite you to step into the pool here, right? And can you share what your thoughts are, your concerns, or your noticing?
I'm Bradley here in Toronto.
Yes, hello.
Hi. In conversations I've had with other coaches, unless the coach is trained in psychology or psychotherapy, I find I get a really muddled response to when I ask them what the difference is between coaching. Like, how do they know they cross the line? It seems, rather than a very thin line, it seems like a sort of a muddied area. And even very experienced coaches.
Right. So how could you help to articulate for people the distinction? In other words, if I were to ask you what if you had to do the thing that I don't do, which is a 10-second or 30-second distinction between coaching and therapy, how would you articulate that?
I would say that therapists work with neurosis.
Yes.
Whereas coaches work with performance.
Hi, this is Linda Crow. I wonder
is to be open to change the word from neurosis to healing, so that psychotherapy works with healing and more performance. You know what? And I would just say that I would put both in, because it's going to work for different people different ways, right? And that's why it's a list. It's, you know, you can do this as a brainstorm together, maybe. You know, on a little team or something. Of course, here I'm making work for you guys. But I just put a little list. It's this or this. That could be helpful.
I think as a coach, I work with healing as well, because of my psychotherapy training.
Yep. That's right. Well, that's why you can't say one or the other. It's a different kind of work, right? So, again, it's two different paradigms, so it looks differently. So, I hear we're losing a lot of people here at the top of the hour. So, do you have any more questions, guys?
Well, I have a question. This is Jonathan again. Has there been any look in helping coaches have tools to know when to refer? Because clearly the schools aren't teaching diagnosis, you know, and if you have somebody who isn't a therapist, just as you have medical practitioners who need to learn when to refer out.
Right.
Has there been any look at how to help people say, oh, this person is depressed, or...
Well, the top 10 that David just referred to, right, is actually very helpful for that. In training, it's identifying when the person is depressed, it's not quite as diagnostic, nor should it be as a therapist, it's not my job when I notice someone is. It's depressed, it's my noticing of it, and it's not my job to diagnose, but to reflect and say, you know, you need another level of support here. So, how much is enough, Jonathan? Right? So I know the schools have done work on it because, you know, they are graduating, you know, people that understand and are doing the referrals. And, you know, there, again, I think I said earlier, there's always more that can be done. So, you know, my question is, how much is enough? What is needed to actually minimally do what is required for people to see what to look for? And I don't know the answer to that personally.
And this is Tom again. At the risk of self-promotion, at the last ICF Research Symposium, Lynn Meinke and I presented the Life Satisfaction Survey, which was actually a survey designed for coaches to use as a screening instrument that can help articulate coaching goals, but also can open conversations around things that might lead to the need for other kinds of referrals outside of the coaching.
Now, that's interesting. You know, Tom, I was trying to figure out, is there a publication from the symposium that's available?
Yes, there is.
Or didn't attend?
Yes, there is.
There is.
I think you can find that on the ICF website, right, Tom?
Yep. I don't know if it's up yet. David, you might know. But if it is,
yeah, you just go to, if it's up, you just go to the office and ask for the proceedings from the research symposium this year, and they'll put you in the right direction if it's not on the website.
If it's not up, it will be soon. And we have one for every year for the last, 5 years or something. So.
Well, I didn't see this year, so maybe it was just too soon when I looked.
It might have been too soon. And, you know, you can, you know, do a call
I think they might even have even seen it on Amazon.com. Sometimes I've seen some of the proceedings even say just do a search. And call the office, definitely.
Yeah.
Also, if you want a PDF copy of Lynn Meinke's and my article, feel free to drop me an email. I can send you a PDF of that. Pamela, thank you so much for being here and enlightening us with just all the experience and wisdom you gained from that. Traveling the world, and your willingness to come here and spend this time with us, just sharing your insights and your understandings about these things.
My pleasure, and I just want to offer to anybody that's here on the call still, if we still have some, is that I'm a completely open book as far as having a conversation, and pop me an email, or if you have a question, or a resistance, or or a contribution, or any of that. Just I am completely open, so don't be shy.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for being on the call and joining us today. We had at least 16 people here at one point on the call today.
Yep.
And There'll be announcements. The next meeting will be about 3 months. And I'm also talking to some people in terms of bringing some more leadership into the call. And, you know, some of you showed up on today's call, and I appreciate you being here. So, thank you, everyone. We'll see you in 3 months. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thanks again, Tim.
Thank you.